children.
Welcome to Beyond Geek by Night, where we go behind the scenes of the Geek by Night podcast. On today's show, we will be discussing the 41st episode, The Variant Issue. This is the second of two after shows, so be sure to check out part one for more behind the scenes discussion on this episode. We are about to go beyond Geek by Night. I am your host, Matt Bennett. I'm joined today, as always, by writer and creator Scott Corelli.
Hi, hi.
Voice of Elliot Markowitz, Matt Mossel.
Hey.
Voice of classic and modern Max Carmichael and composer for Geek by Night, Scott Tofty.
Hello there.
Writer and voice of Billy, Nick Jimenez.
Hey, girl.
And voice of Lorelei Swift, Naomi Wong.
Hi, Bobby.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. So this is part two. We had a couple people over on our first one, mostly the cast that was returning from Classic Geek by Night. But we've got a whole separate group here to talk about this huge, wild episode. And I think I am going to start with you, Tofty. You are one of the members who is returning from Classic Geek by Night, as well as a longtime member of the modern version of Geek by Night. And one of the one of the most telling and characteristic aspects of this episode is sort of the musical identity of the Classic Geek by Night returning, especially in the form of things like I'm Not a Loser, the theme song, and some of the transitional sounds. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the sound and musical choices that you made in this episode?
Yeah. First off, this is a super fun episode because I still have a huge place in my heart for that original run of Geek by Night, even though it didn't really have music in it other than the scene transition, which, you know, last time I was on, I think Scott and I talked about it was like a Nintendo DS guitar music program that like Corelli would like tap chords out on, and that's how you made it. So I sort of tried to pull a little bit more from like season one as far, and it was really more instrumentation. Like there's a lot of mallets and xylophone and marimba in this episode that are, you know, hitting familiar themes, hitting the Underdog Comics theme, hitting the Max and Billy theme. So mostly it's the sounds that I tried to keep sort of similar.
You twisted a lot of those themes, though, a little bit.
I did, and I'll talk about that a little bit. Bringing back I'm Not a Loser was a Corelli thing. I didn't have anything to do with that. It was in the file when I got it, and I was like, ha, this is exciting. It's here. There is a piece in the score where I quoted the I'm Not a Loser melody, and I think I had to tell Corelli about it. I was like, did you notice I did this? And he was like, no. Now I'm more excited. So that's fun. And then, you know, the lore, like everything was getting twisted up and mashed around in this one. Maybe most notably the Lorelei theme. The notes that Corelli gave me were like, we need something that sounds like it could eventually become Lorelei, but it's like crazy and chaotic and not fully formed. And as the episode goes on, it's progressing towards getting to that Lorelei Swift theme, which that was a lot of fun to do, playing with, you know, Naomi's vocal cadence in the Lorelei themes is kind of helping to set the tempo of that piece, and trying to use similar instrumentation, but trying to make it sound just off was a lot of fun. I really liked what we came up with for that. And then like the Underdog Comics theme, all that stuff, trying to invert it, come up with different melodies, trying to twist it around, the Max and Billy stuff, bringing back like the Monopoly Tango piece in bits and pieces, calling a lot of stuff from the library, but then also trying to spin off a lot of that stuff into new directions. There's not a lot of, like, the last few episodes that I did were very synth heavy, were very, very different sounding. I wanted this one to sound purposefully more like a season one episode. So there is some sort of sense of, no pun intended, nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. It's a very comfy score, Tofty.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. The Powers theme popping up in there, you know, that's probably the biggest one that reoccurred through the whole run of the show, is that little chimey powers theme.
It's, I mean, it's really useful in periods where, like, you can't see anything, so you can't see, like, I don't know, like a glowy thing or something, but you can hear the powers theme, so you know something's going on with powers.
Yeah.
So it's very useful in that way.
And then my spin on the A-Team theme at the end is like all the crazy plan stuff is coming together. Mm-hmm. I was like, ah, we're just going to do the A-Team. I'm just doing the A-Team.
So speaking of Naomi and Lorelai's character throughout this episode, Naomi, I want to ask you about this sort of alternate version of Lorelai Swift and, you know, what you did to kind of switch up Lorelai a little bit and what you wanted to maintain in her character for this very fun, different version of Lorelai.
Oh, you know, I like playing different versions of people anyway. I feel like that's what I just do in life, because you get a different me depending on the situation, and this one felt more like a more accessible Lorelai to me, because I'm definitely very far away from being a billionaire, so it felt a bit more down to earth, a bit more relatable. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we wanted to keep like her essence the same, because, you know, she's the heart is the same, it's just without necessarily all the fancy gizmos. It's just the junkyard gizmos instead. Stolen, liberated. Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned in last week's Beyond that I think we kind of wrote this as an apology to Naomi for the whole Quint from Jaws thing.
I just couldn't do it, man. I just couldn't.
I know. But we knew you could do this, so we were like, yeah, okay. Let's give her Doc Brown Lorelai instead. And yeah, and she just like absolutely wrecks house in every scene. So
much fun.
Yeah. I've been plagiarizing Doc Brown my entire life.
Scott and Nick, from a writing perspective, was it pretty obvious where Lorelai would be in this alternate version, or was it something you guys kind of threw around?
It's so I love this version of Lorelai. I loved writing her. I loved hearing Naomi play her. I loved Tofty writing. It really those scenes really do sing. She's so interesting because at first I think, oh well, we just changed her external circumstances. Like, what if she wasn't a billionaire? How would that change the way she presents herself? You know, she's a little more humble, like Naomi said, she's a little more relatable, accessible. But then I think about the Charlie angle, which is, in this universe, Charlie is the billionaire. Charlie is the superstar celebrity. And so it's like, oh, so something was different as they were growing up. There was some kind of variable to where this version of Lorelai is content to some extent, living this humble life, but does kind of resent Charlie. So it's like, yeah, I just kind of nerd out about the show thinking about that.
Yeah, I think that the Charlie of it all, I think it was an interesting element to crack. And I don't remember if that ended up in the outline, or if that was something that we had even talked about, or if that was just something that was in Nick's first pass. It was just like a throwaway thing. And I was like, oh, and I think I might have like, yeah, I think it might've been like just a throwaway line. And then I kind of expanded it to like really put a more of a fine point on it, because I was like, no, this is interesting, because, you know, you go back to their history and it's like Charlie technically invented the grid. I don't know. And then, you know, Lorelai's just sort of like becomes a billionaire because of that. yeah, I guess in this version, Charlie didn't tell Lorelai anything about that, and then just, you know, went and did it herself, I would assume. Yeah, it's just interesting how different their lives become as a result. But they still have a lot of resentment for each other.
But like, does she meet Henry? Is Henry over there working with Charlie? Like, what's like, that's so interesting.
Yeah, that's
this is
true.
All gonna get answered in the Young Lorelai spinoff series.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Young Lorelai.
Geek by Night Babies. Yes,
yes, yes. Clearly.
So Nick, in part one of this after show, Scott talked a little bit about the origins of this episode from a writing perspective, but I'd like to get your take as well. So what was it like as a writer to return to this world of classic Geek by Night and sort of bring things full circle?
It was so comfortable. It was so cozy. And I think we had kind of, the three of us, you know, Scott and Cass and I, we kind of talked about, they had just gone through, and we had gone through such like a thrill ride with the Tomorrow trilogy. Let's somehow do something really big and crazy, but also kind of cozy and comfortable and kind of a breath. And so writing it was just really fun. And Scott, I think we had already gone back and listened to the classic episodes at that point, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so it was all fresh in my mind, and I have a lot of personal nostalgia for that period of the show. And so it was like really fun and cozy. And even like the new scenes of the new world with Alt Lorelei, with the Madison Mindy angle, which I can't wait to talk more about. There was always this kind of almost like Nancy Myers-y kind of coziness to everything. I mean, the Holt family stuff is very cozy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a fun episode to write.
Yeah. I also think, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but I think this is, once we figured out what this was, because we had a false start with the Joel episode that we talked about, right?
Yeah.
So we had a false start, but once we got through that and figured out what this was, I feel like from soup to nuts, script-wise, this was the fastest we wrote anything this season.
I think you're right. I think it was just so smooth. We just immediately found it.
It was just like, oh, yeah, like this writes it. Literally, it felt like it was writing itself. It was crazy. Yeah.
Scott, did you have a plan in the long term? Like, were you like, we have to do an episode with Classic Geek by Night? Was that like up on the board?
No. I talked about it last week. I think there was this doesn't spoilers for something that doesn't happen in the finale, but there was a alternate version where I was going to have like a little fun little thing where I was like, oh yeah, we'll do like a On Your Left kind of like element in the finale where like Kevin Ziegler's Elliot shows up from like an alternate universe, because we were toying with the idea that like all of the weird versions of them and making it weird were all actually from alternate universes. So there was going to be like a set of underdogs from like the vampire universe where they're all Draculas. And then there's going to be like a set where they're all like little devils and all unicorns. And like, yeah. And then one of them was going to be the classic underdogs. And that was going to be a thing that was going to be in the finale, but we ended up not having any reason for that. So as we were like breaking stuff, and then this sort of happened out of the loss of the Joel-centric episode. So, yeah.
So, Nick, you mentioned the new dynamic between Mindy and Madison, and I think it's a delightful Mindy episode. Mm-hmm. But can you tell us more about writing that those specific scenes and sort of how those formulated?
Yeah, well, it's no secret that, you know, I have babies. And Mindy and Madison are just like two of my favorite characters to write, especially when they're together. But I just immediately liked, this was such an opportunity to play with dynamics in the show. Like, oh, well, what if Lorelai was really humble and like didn't think she was like, you know, kind of had all these secrets and was actually kind of vulnerable. And with Mindy and Madison, it was like, oh, what if like they were like coworkers and kind of like had a network TV kind of back and forth. And writing a version of Madison that was just a bit calmer and had a bit more stability in her life, but still had that edge and really enjoyed challenging Mindy and calling her out and doing kind of, and then also like bringing different stuff out of both those actors was really fun. Mm-hmm. Like I remember writing and being like, oh, I can't wait to see how Natalie does this or how Morgan plays, you know, this kind of like 13 going on 30 kind of like, whoa, look at my new clothes, look at my new apartment. And so, yeah, again, it just, I was so excited to write it. I think that's why it all kind of happened so quickly.
Yeah. That whole plot line, and we actually hinted a different plot line too, that were like elements that we were like, oh yeah, if the show was ongoing, if we did it forever, these were things that we were going to like do eventually, like the idea of a city protector, and the idea of Max running for mayor. Those were all things that
I feel robbed.
All of those things. those were all things that we had like discussed doing in future seasons. Had we not decided to wrap the show up. So this was also our chance, like, oh, we're in an alternate universe. Like, we can just say that those things happened and reference them. And so that was a lot of fun playing with that stuff, too.
I am so mad I'm not going to get the Aaron Sorkin-style Max Billy walk and talk through City Hall.
Yeah. Well, it would not have been Max and Billy. This would have been while Billy was presumably in prison or something.
Right.
This would have actually been Max and Gwen. Gwen would have been
even
Max's,
better.
Like, yeah.
Campaign manager.
Yeah, campaign manager.
Master, handler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my god. Now I do want a spinoff. Shit.
Yeah, we don't have enough episodes. This is there's too many good ideas here.
Somebody fanfic it, please.
So Matt, I think I'm going to pick on you next. Okay. You haven't been on in a little bit, and I want to talk about Elliot. So what was your initial reaction to the concept of this episode? We touched a little last time on like the read through with the whole cast and everything, but I'm interested to know your initial thoughts when you got this script.
Yeah, great question. So this whole kind of concept, whether it's, you know, alternate dimension or even like a time travel thing, which is kind of similar where you're meeting yourself or a different version of yourself, I am quite the sucker for that. I think there's a lot of opportunity for just you're meeting the character from a different perspective or exploring things differently that you, I wouldn't say you can't do, but it's just, I don't know, it always feels very fresh and there's like a built-in urgency and tempo to it. It feels like you're not just like, oh cool, and then you're chill, you know. There's, it's more of, ah, there's, okay, something's clearly wrong here or different and we have to figure that out. So I love that so much. So that was my
And you are one of the characters who was recast in between the classic version of Geek by Night and the version we know today. Prior to acting in Geek by Night, did you listen to or study to classic Geek by Night? Was that something you ever spent time on, or was it something that you sort of wanted to bring your own perspective to Elliot?
Yeah, I did not.
I might have specifically told him not to, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't want him influenced at all. I wanted him to have his own take on the character.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that, or that concept, or I've like other actors talked about that, or like, oh, did you know, see the original performance? And they did not for that. Yeah, I just trusted that. Hey, do this role.
Yeah.
No, but, right. But I will say, I mean, hearing the OG. I was like, wow, this guy's really good. He should be Elliot. Man. That was a really strong performance. Dang. So that was fun. I don't know, it's fun to be able to see or hear that and be like, oh yeah, that totally works. And just how there are almost, you can, you know, play a character in a lot of different ways while still hitting like sort of the truth of the character, I guess, or having like the core of the character. Mm-hmm. And that's just another reminder, like, yeah, I mean, you don't have to be locked into, there's not a specific way or the best way to play a character, but just if you're trying to be as truthful and honest as you can with what you got with the scene and everything, then that can totally work. So,
yeah,
I really like the dynamic between Matt's Elliot and this Lorelai and the, like, him just constantly being like, whoa, chill, relax, let's, hold on, let me aim you at something, is just, like, a really, like, it's, because he's such a different Elliot, because he's so much more mature, which is, like, just the nature of, like, what this version of Geek by Night is, versus what the classic version was, and yeah, so he's just much more mature and much more put together. Having that energy bounce off of this version of Lorelei, I just think was really fun. And I loved like having him inspire her to take the classic underdogs to like the next level. You know, so presumably, things change over there, in that universe,
right?
Big time. And that's kind of exciting. And that's all because of Matt Elliott and, you know, everything.
And
that
kind of
this episode,
you know, we, that kind of works on a meta level too, because Lorelei Swift, the character, was really the chemical X in this version of the show, this new version of the show that took all of the characters and the plot to the next level, because we were so fascinated by her. That led to Charlie, that led to Billy and Henry and that whole saga.
It's true.
You almost get a reversal in Elliot and Lorelei's dynamic in this episode compared to the beginning of the show, when Lorelei's first introduced as this genius billionaire tech person. And now Elliot's the one with all the information and all the context and sort of driving things forward. And I thought that was really fun as well, that it's an Elliot that has been through a lot and understands what's going on and all that.
And if you remember correctly, in the episode where they meet Lorelei, he's the one who's like, no, we're not doing this. We don't need this. We have a comic shop to run. I have responsibilities. We have responsibility. No, we're not doing this. And going from that guy to like, no, actually, you all need her, is, I think, a really cool little arc for his character, of just like, yeah, no, you all need some fun in your lives and some just a little more chaos. Because that's what makes life worth living, right?
Gnomes, was it fun playing this kind of alt version of her, where you can kind of maybe make new norms after playing her for so long?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll be real, every time I get a new script, I have to go back and re-listen to everything else, because I, as you can tell, I do not speak in the same way as she does, so I kind of forget, like, wait, do I know how to do a Scottish accent? What was the kind of? We'll see. It's all. I've categorized it before. It's Scottish for American audiences. It's just
mid-Atlantic Scottish. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. But I figure, you know, she's lived abroad for a while. It's fine if it's not perfect. Question mark.
See, you've got a much more positive head on your shoulders than Zach Luna does.
Oh, yeah. It's the way you have to justify it to yourself. Otherwise, I would never do anything. No, I find it's real fun, especially, as I say, when you get new scripts, and sometimes there's a bit more space between when you get them. But having a new take on it, it takes off some of the pressure as well, because it's like, oh, this is just a new character. It's the same character. But it's a different character. So yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
So Tofty, this episode has a lot of completed and in progress character arcs for a lot of characters, but Max is definitely no stranger to that. He's grown a lot over the last few episodes. How did you feel about how he chooses to behave in this episode, especially to Billy? It was a really joyful, you know, kind of continuation of how we've seen Max develop in the last few episodes.
Yeah, I kind of like the swerve of getting like, oh, he's going to just be old school Max. He's going to like revert to his ways. Like the opportunity for him is there to just be like, oh, okay, now that you know all the things, like go back and like really be the bad guy. But he is so fundamentally changed that he can't bring himself to do it, right? Like all these plans that Billy's coming up with, he's the idea of Max being like, it's too evil, can we do less evil, is kind of great to me. And sort of not having him come out and be like, I'm a good guy now, but like exploring his character change through like giving him the chance to be like, here you go, you get to do like all the things that you screwed up, that, you know, in the other universe, you can go back and do it again, and you could truly be the evil mastermind. And him just choosing, like, nah, I don't think that's who I am anymore, and sort of testing him in that way, I thought was a really interesting way to do it, rather than you know, just outright having him confront Billy and be like, I'm a good guy now, and Billy, you should change your ways. Like, there's some obvious ways that could have gone, and I'm really glad it didn't go that way. I'm glad it was a little bit more masked and more of, like, him having to sort of examine himself and come to those conclusions. Yeah, I would have loved to hypnotize some people for a dollar for no good reason whatsoever. You know,
you did one guy.
One guy, the one guy, but it still was like, it was almost like an act of good. Like, that's not Max. I wanted, like, he wants to be evil, but like wanted to be evil. But as he is so fond of saying, you know, he's in the midst of his redemption arc. So I liked it. I thought it was great. It was a fun opportunity. I had to act. I normally just read things in a deep voice, and I feel like I had to act on this one a little bit, which I am not an actor. So, you know.
Did you, the writers, see it as a test of Max's character in the same way? I think that's a really cool way of viewing it.
I think that's what it turned into. I think originally it was mostly just like us being like, well, how do we get Max to be Max again? Because like, that's what you want in an episode like this, right? And it's like, oh yeah, what if he was just in like, because, you know, he just had the phone call that we did not hear with Billy, you know, dying in his deathbed, Billy. So clearly he is having some kind of crisis, internal crisis, that he hasn't been able to talk to anybody about. And so the idea of him ending up in this universe where he can just fall right back into his old ways and like, like a warm bath, comfy. I don't have to make any decisions or change my ways in any way whatsoever, only to discover, oh, I already have. And I think I just think it was a really cool opportunity to have Max be given everything that he's ever wanted, only for him to realize it's not enough, which is kind of the same arc that we were going for with the underdogs, which we talked about last week, you know, getting the shop back and everything. So, yeah, that was kind of a theme. You know, I mean, the original title for this episode was The Easy Thing, which was sort of like, you know, driven through several storylines. You know, you had the underdogs kind of just being like, we'll just run the shop. That's easy. And then you had Max being like, the easy thing. Phenomenal. And then you had Simon believing he was taking the easy way by staying behind, only to learn that making out with Mindy is actually way easier. you know.
And then pretty recently, I think this year or maybe sometime in 2023, I DM'd Cass and Scott and like, can we name it The Variant Issue? And they were like, yes.
No, I think it was, you didn't even ask. I think you were just like, man, I wish we had called it The Variant Issue. And I was like, yeah, it's now called The Variant Issue. Like there's no, yeah, of course. Of course that's what it has to be called. That's why it changed. But yeah, The Easy Thing was the original title. And that was from just like a thematic standpoint of like, how do we test these guys by giving them the opportunity to have the easy way out of all their responsibilities, and like and by doing that we show how much they've grown past those things. I don't know, I think that's fun and typical for Mazel's Elliot to be like, am I the only responsible one here? Like
the only adult.
I'm the only adult.
I want to throw out to Nick a compliment too, just because the entire run that we've done this show, we have never, I don't think we've ever recorded a Max and Billy scene together at the same time. And I don't know how you do it, man, but it's just so effortless. Like when I hear the parts stitched together, it sounds like we're riffing off each other. And my one big regret is that we never really had the opportunity to like get in a room and do a proper Max Billy like dumb scene and actually get to riff off each other. Props to the editing team and all that, but like mostly Nick, like you're just so natural on the microphone and your reactions. Thank you. What the hell was that? Like at the end of the whole thing was like just so perfect.
Yeah. Speaking of though, I got to shout out Mazel's line delivery that made me laugh every time, which was like when you show back up and like I just loved in this whole episode, they're like, "Yeah, Max is either gone forever or he's going to like get tired and bored and end up coming back, whatever. So you come back at the worst moment possible, and you keep coming. You're like, hello, everyone. I'm back, and I'm good again. And Matt's like, Max, shut up right now, or I'm going to choke you with a plastic bag. That killed me every time I listened to this episode. It was so funny.
And Nick, you got to play a Billy that we don't get to see very much. Typically, Billy is either, you know, kind of hiding in the shadows, which is a version of him that we've known for a very long time, or he's sort of in control and kind of understands everything and sort of, you know, one step ahead. But here we saw him really, really thrown off and really flustered. How was it getting to play sort of this this new iteration?
It was really fun. Well, I mean, you know, you say new, and he is new in a lot of ways, but, you know, Scott and I had just got, we had just finished listening to all of the classic Geek by Nights for this retrospective we were doing for the Patreon. And so that version of me was fresh in my head. And so when it came time to record this episode and switch into actor mode, I was like kind of doing an impression of 16-year-old Nick. Mm-hmm. Before he had started smoking weed and his voice deepened quite dramatically. Do you remember us looking at each other, Scott, of like, holy shit. Like,
yeah, we were listening to like the first episode back and we're like, who is this child?
Hey, everyone, it's me, Nick Jimenez. So it was, yeah, it was really fun getting to play this. I was actually, it's fun whenever actor Nick and writer Nick kind of have like a impasse, because I remember when the script came that even this Billy is duplicitous, mm-hmm. and even this Billy has plans. And there was a part of me that was like, oh, can the whole world is so like Saturday morning cartoon. Can this version of him just be Marcy? Can he just be a lapdog? Mm-hmm. And it was sad coming to be like, yeah, even this version of him is restless and lies and has dual identities and stuff.
I love two things about the Billy in this. I love, because I basically untouched his Billy dialogue from his first pass, just because I'm like, at this point he knows this guy better than I do, and so like I love two things. I love one, that so much time has passed since we left the original show, but he's in the exact same place that he always was. Nothing has changed. Yes, he probably does have these machinations, but like, eventually I'm going to get to that. But it still hasn't happened. And isn't that just the way? I love how much he despises Simon on like a molecular level. Every time Simon talks, he's just like, shut up, stupid. Yeah, stupid. it's that just tickled me to no end, and I didn't delete any of those out of the script. I just left them all in because I just think it's so funny how much animosity he has
after all these years.
Yeah.
Nick, I had another writing question for you, because I would like to get your perspective on these types of things. Another big reveal that we have in this episode is a big culmination in Simon and Mindy's relationship. We sort of get the big kiss, the official, you know, confirmation of them. And they took kind of a different trajectory than they did in the original show. So how did it feel being able to sort of finally get to this culminated point for that relationship here?
It's so fun. I mean, to be honest, when you're writing these, you're spinning so many plates that you're kind of looking at everyone in like a macro kind of way. And so the Mindy Simon stuff is just kind of one plate, and and you're like, okay, good. That's spinning. Great. That means that we got the physics right. And listening to it, it's so fun, because you kind of get to see it kind of like for the first, they're listening to it for the first time. And it's just hitting me how like Simon really is like the protagonist in a Nancy Meyers movie in this one, where he's like planning a wedding and he's making dinner. And then he has this big dramatic rom-com moment where he thinks he's saying goodbye, but then Mindy wrestles him out, shakes him out of this, you know? And yeah, it's so beautifully played. I mean, both of these actors have brought such warmth and love to these characters, and so hearing that moment finally get to play out, and hearing how Morgan and Andrew did it, and Scott and score, and Scott's editing, it was really satisfying to hit that crescendo before even the finale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a listener as well, I made a lot of happy noises hearing this for the first time a few weeks ago. It was really great.
Yeah, Toffee's score in that whole scene is like bananas. Just absolutely bananas good.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so does anybody else have any fun behind-the-scenes tidbits or anything like that to share about this episode?
I mean, I just keep thinking, like, it was so great to get the script and have the classic version pulled out to sort of explore again. Every time that I think about it, I'm like, 2007. Mm-hmm. How did we do this back in 2007? How, like,
not
it just
well.
Blows my no. Well, well enough that it creates a there's a real place in my heart for that show. Yeah. Like the original run. Like what we have done here in the new seasons is amazing. The step up in creativity and writing and acting and production, everything is great. But like, there is something about that original series that was like, it like ragtag bunch of internet nerds are gonna make a show. Like it's just so like, it's such a precious memory, and to be able to go back to that is like, it is, you know, you've said comforting a lot of times in this sort of recap. It's very comforting. Mm-hmm. But Jesus, how did we get that old?
I don't know.
When did it happen?
I also just want to say, like, you know, I think that this episode serves like an important function in terms of like, yeah, all of the plot and character stuff, yeah, whatever. you know, all that thing that worked really hard, yeah, building and everything, yeah, whatever, who cares? But it serves an important function, I think, in the season tonally, because it's just like the last, you know, trilogy of episodes was just such a wild ride. And it's so, it almost feels like it is the show and it's what the show has evolved into, but it feels like an antithesis to the show that everyone's been listening to up to this point. Whereas this just feels like, oh yeah, this is the, this is it. This is the show. I remember this. This is the vibe. And it was important to me that we gave people that one more time before we get out of here. Because the next three episodes are just as like nuts. As
a lot of moving.
Yeah. As the last three. So, so it was really important that this felt like a, you know, little gave everybody room to breathe and, you know, have like low stakes again. And it was just nice. It's a really nice episode. And, I'm just exceptionally proud of it. And it is my favorite episode until, presumably the series finale, which I'm so psyched for. But yeah,
Nick, go ahead.
Oh, well, I'd like to see, you know, say two, you know, think like two things. It's so awesome to be here with Matt and Naomi. I can't emphasize enough how just and Tofty, absolutely, of the music, just how fun those scenes are to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And just the back and forth and the way you guys play the characters is just so fun. And also, just Kevin Ziegler's performance in this as Elliot. It's, you know, hearing him as Elliot again, it brought me back to being like in high school with my iPod listening to the original Geek by Night run before I was even in the show. And so it's kind of the closest you can get to like bringing an imaginary friend back to life. And when the underdog, when his underdogs come back and he's like, I really missed you guys. You know, it hit me that like, oh, that's them. That's the versions that I had in high school, and they're back and they're still friends and nothing's changed. And I got very emotional, and to have that come from like, and then it was like, of like, oh my God, like my friends and I made this. Like, this isn't like a Disney HBO thing, like we did this together, and it took like 3 years, but I'm listening to it now. And so I wish every creative person that kind of catharsis and like a thing that they've made.
Yeah. Yep. Shout out to Chris O'Connor returning as classic Gibson and playing everything up here. Which is so I was like, he was doing it. I was like, ah, that's what he sounded like. That's funny. Yeah, it was just really, it was really great. I am curious, you know, Tofty, you've been on Beyond already this season, but Matt and Naomi, what are your thoughts on the season so far? You know, like we're at the halfway point right now. So how are you feeling about it all coming together?
Oh, man. Well, I think with this kind of thing, you always are impressed with the amount of work that just goes into everything, you know, every aspect of it. And lost my thought.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Everyone.
just the coordination alone just feels like, wow, a lot of stuff had to like come in to make this happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's speechless.
I mean, even just scheduling the like table reads must have been an absolute logistical nightmare for you guys. Because, I mean, there's what, four time zones just in America?
Yeah.
And then you've got me on a tiny little island.
Yeah, four. Four. And then you. Yeah.
Just throwing everyone off. Like, hey, guys, wake up. Just wake up, Alia. You know, this season is wild. Like, it's definitely in phases because I'm like, what? I find it difficult to keep up with audio only things myself just because of my own way my brain works. I get so used to just like I read along and all that stuff. And wow, it's absolutely insane. I don't know how you kept track of who was doing what at any given time and knew how to tie them all together. And the way that everyone comes together at any given moment is fascinating. Love to dissect your brains.
When this is done,
I have a better answer.
Oh,
sorry. Okay,
all right, go for it.
then what I said before, it makes me think of like some of my favorite books or book series that I read. They're often described, and like when you look at the reviews online, they're like, "Man, the first book, I just couldn't get into it. I gave up halfway through." But if you like stick through it, the seventh book. Oh man, it really like I love. So it just takes time to pay off huge. It's not like the first stuff is bad, but it's just you need that initial investment. And I feel like that's what with a lot of things, this you know second season you can do that because you've invested in the characters and different things. Where you get to these episodes, are just like all this stuff can happen because you've already established. Mm-hmm. A lot of like the growth or the different aspects of the characters. So then it's just like, oh, yay! You know, you can have that sort of party and fun with everything because you've done the work leading up to it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said about finishing as well. You know, I mean, George Martin hasn't finished the Game of Thrones series. Patrick Rothfuss hasn't finished it. Like, you know, it is very difficult. It's easy to start something. It is very, very difficult to complete.
We did it twice.
Yeah. And, you know, just the fact that, you know, we're going to have these 44 episodes with a full complete middle and end, mm-hmm. is such a monumental achievement just because finishing a piece of art is just very difficult. Like, it's not even more complicated than that. It's really, really hard to complete something. Mm-hmm. And I get that feeling in talking about these final episodes that this is not a rare thing to be able to be a part of something and contribute this much and also be able to put a button on it at the end and, you know, not just contribute, but mm-hmm. complete.
So yeah, like along with that, I was having a question with everyone that worked on the original series, because I've kind of gone through a similar thing where I've had a project where I've worked on in the past, and then I came back to it more seriously, but then I had also grown in my skill set and everything so much. So like the work putting into it was just like, well, now I know how to do this thing, so now I have to kind of have to do that. And it just, what did you guys in each of your perspective roles, like what did you notice you had the most, I guess, growth in coming into this the second time doing it, and anything that was just like that, because I imagine there's more overall work just within each episode that went into it compared to the first run through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my writing has certainly improved, my understanding of like a lot of things has improved. But in terms of like the technicality of stuff, I feel like, you know, from that perspective, that was what I was learning over the course of this. You know, like this was much more of a collaborative process, whereas before it was like all these people are helping me make my thing, I think, in the original show. Just because like I was like directing every episode and editing every episode, and like it was like that last show was 100% me, because, you know, I was afraid that if I bothered anyone to help me, like then like they'd be like, oh, well, I don't want to do this now. And I'm like, okay. So I just did it all myself. This time I have Nick and I have Cass and I have Tofty, who I just can't scare away, no matter what I give him to do. Somehow he always shows up and helps. I'm grateful for that. And so, yeah, I learned a lot about collaboration, learned a lot about sound editing, which was much more simplistic in the original show, and learned how to give music like score notes, which, you know, the success of that is more up to Tofty than me, but I do my best in terms of trying to explain the vibes without sort of like dictating
we didn't even do that in like the first two seasons of this one. It's like that we learned stuff as we went in this iteration of the show too. Like the way I wrote music is very different now than it was in season one.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing, I think, with this new show is just like, I want everyone to be so proud of it. Like, I just want, to make something that everyone is proud of being a part of. And that includes Tofty, which is why I'm constantly challenging him with crazy score stuff, because I want him to not feel like, I don't want him to get bored. Like, I don't want him to feel like he's half-assing
anything.
Oh,
I'm not bored. Yeah. I am not bored.
Yeah. I want him to feel like really proud of like, oh no, I don't know if I can do this. Oh, I did it. Like that's how I want everyone to feel. That's why I gave Naomi the Quint from Jaws. It just didn't work out. But you know, lesson learned. It's fine. It's all fine. It all worked out. I think it plays flawlessly in the episode, Naomi. I talked about how guilty I felt about that on that episode.
There's so many factors. It wasn't.
There's
like so many personal issues.
But like the relief we all felt when we just remembered we could cut it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We just have. Well, Nick, you just say this, and then I can cut the whole thing, and we did, and it was great. Yeah. I don't know. What about you, Nick? What have you? What have you? I guess learned between the two seasons, or what?
I think Tofty's right. I think listening to all of you, I think by this last like third season, or you know whatever what it ended up becoming, I think we all just got really good at making Geek by Night.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in my part, I listened to the whole show a couple of times in the years that we were making these final episodes, and so I kind of started accepting. Not accepting as in like settling, but understanding like, oh, this is what the score sounds like, and this is what the actors sound like, and this is what our writing is like. So as we were making the last episodes, I wasn't visualizing this like thing in my head. I was imagining what the show, and letting it kind of be itself in the most confident way. And I think that's kind of what we're hearing in the variant issue, which is what I think is so satisfying about it.
Yeah.
Can you just imagine? Just imagine if this was our full-time job and we got to do these 44 episodes, but we did them in like 2 years instead of however long it's been. Like the engine's just starting to fire and we're like, okay, guys, we got to wrap it up. We're all way like there's too much in everyone's life. Like imagine if like we got to really focus in on this. What it could be.
And I think that's kind of like what the references in the issue that Scott was talking about is like things like Max running for mayor or like City Protector and all this. It's like, oh, this is kind of what we would have done if we lived in the universe where we were able to somehow monetize this in the way that requires it to be a full-time job,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
or having the time to do it
allows it to be a full-time job. I should.
I'm just looking forward 6 years from now when Corelli's like, hey guys, I pitched it to a network, they bought it. Like, you know, like as much as we say Geek by Night is ending, there's a part of me that's been for 20 years almost that I'm like, Corelli's gonna keep this in his back pocket, and like someday the opportunity is gonna pop up and he's gonna be like, hey, I had this thing I did once.
Yeah. No,
someone's gonna be like, "That's a great idea."
I look forward to pitching in a room, and Nick and I are just they're just like whacking back every one of our ideas, just being like, "No, not interested," and then we just look at each other and we're like, "So there's this thing called Geek by Night," and they're like, "Done," and it's like, "God, yeah, it's happening again. We're doing it again."
10 years from now, the red phone rings, and we're all just like, "It's time."
Yeah, I want you, Benny, to put a pin in that as a question, maybe for one of the finale beyonds of like, if we had to reboot the show again as a television series or something, how would we do it? Because I would love to answer that question, just not right
Definitely.
Now.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's about a group of people in their mid to late 40s.
On the way to their 50s.
They find a magical cane that gives them powers.
Someone has spiked all the Centrum Silver in the grocery store.
Yeah.
So the way that I like to end each of these is by giving shout outs to anybody's contributions to the episode who aren't in the room with us here. So does anybody have anybody they want to call out for their role in this episode?
Big shout out to Ray for the Gwen in this episode. It's just like not talked about enough right amongst us, and I don't know if you talked to Ray last week, but unbelievable performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, terrific. Yeah, yeah, they did a really great job with returning to that Gwen, the yeah, that Gwen, like capital T. It was oh man, yeah. Gwen stressed me out in this episode. I want to shout out I guess, you know, because we haven't really talked about them too much. Nick brought them up a little earlier, but like, yeah, Morgan and Madison's stuff. Morgan and Madison. Mindy and Madison. Yeah, one actress, one character. Yeah. Mindy and Madison stuff in this, I think, is really fun. You know, I guess going back to that original title of The Easy Way, like, all Mindy wants to do is just like be a superhero, and now she gets the opportunity and she's like, ugh, red tape. And it just like learning that, like, oh yeah, it's not going to be as easy as just like roughing people up, dude. Like, you gotta like have some standards for yourself and rules and things like that. I got to get a lot of things off my chest about the police force in this. I think we all got a lot of stuff off our chest about like just the nature of like politics and the socioeconomics.
Oh, yeah, we haven't talked about the joke of
taxing
that,
the
of just like slowly learning that this is a utopia.
Yes. I just thought that that would be funny because of how much the old show makes me cringe for all of the 2007, 2008 of it all. I just thought it would be funny if we're like, what if this was like a utopia now?
It's also a paradise.
It's just like overcorrected.
But we don't have the Mandalorian.
Yeah. Yeah, right. They don't have the Mandalorian. I mean, that's the reason why, right? That's why it's a utopia.
Lucas still holds the rights? Is that what it is?
I could have done that. I could have wrote those jokes for like 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Just slowly, just line by line, just like, well, you know, ever since President Kerry did this or whatever.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
We had a whole thing about, there's like one line, but what are they called? Hero clicks? Like, I wanted to include a joke that hero clicks had actually become like the currency of that world.
Hero clicks. Oh man. Yeah, anybody else have any shout outs from the episode?
Hey, mine was Ray, so you've already covered that.
Oh.
But
I'd like to shout out Nerf Herder for I'm Not a Loser.
Yeah.
That's what I want to shout out.
Thanks, Nerf Herder.
Good song.
They're not in this episode, but I want to shout out Janet and Victor, because we had a deleted subplot where Janet in this universe had become like the Shailene Woodley, or like
that was the Joel episode. That was the Joel version.
Yeah. When they were in the alternate universe longer, and they were going to go to a premiere, and I think like Victor was like the bodyguard, right?
Yeah, I think so. Or like agent or something. Yeah. I think you're right, bodyguard, because I think we were referencing Parker Posey and Patrick Warburton in Scream 3. I think is what we were. I think that's what we were doing in that version of the
script. And I think the joke was Madison was going to be Janet's assistant. And like, here you go, Miss Stokely, here's your coffee.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was definitely the joke. But they do get there's an Easter egg in this. I don't know if anyone caught it, but the Easter egg is in this. We mentioned Janet and Victor, I think, in this. So,
Do you want to reveal what those are? If we're thinking of the same ones?
Yeah. So it's in the Madison and Mindy stuff. When Mindy ran for City Protector, Madison mentions that her rivals were opponents, a YouTuber, ex Disney star, and a guy who wanted too badly to be Captain America. So that's
Janet and Victor.
That's Janet and Victor. They ran against Mindy, and Mindy won in a landslide. So who knows what they're doing now? Important schedule note. Our next episode, Failure to Launch, will be premiering on May 6th on the main feed. So the next two episodes, we're going to go dark on the main feed. But if you want to listen to the next episode right now, as always, it is already up on Patreon. That's duelinggenre.com/support. But as far as the main feed is concerned, Failure to Launch, our next episode, will air May 6th. It is the first part of our series finale, sort of arc of episodes. We've got three episodes left, and we'll be done. So yeah, May 6th, Failure to Launch, part one of our series finale.
Well, I want to say thank you again to my guests for coming on today, Scott, Nick, Matt, Naomi, and Scott Tofty, for joining me. And thank you to all of you, the fans, the underdogs, for listening. If you'd like to support the show, please join the Dueling Genre Patreon at duelinggenre.com/support. And if you want to hear more about these alternate versions of our heroes, you can listen to all 15 episodes of Classic Geek by Night on Patreon, as well as bonus content from some of Dueling Genre's best shows, including weekly episodes of Dueling Genre Tonight. You can also tell your friends, families, and followers to subscribe to Geek by Night on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening to this right now. Finally, if you like our show, please leave a positive rating for us on iTunes. Thanks for going beyond Geek by Night with us. Have a super day.